Hi, I'm Mabrur Wase. I currently work as a management consultant. I've been in the US for 3 years, 2 years doing my MBA and then 1 year at work. I'm originally from Bangladesh. And I'm with Anuj and Deepika today in the podcast at the end of the day.
Mabrur, thank you so much for your time.
It's my pleasure. Anuj and Deepika.
You are a management consultant at PricewaterhouseCoopers. What kind of company or organization is PricewaterhouseCoopers?
So PwC is one of the big four accounting firms. That's how I think most people know them. Mm-hmm. And over the years, most of the big four were very involved in consulting. And then I think around 10 or 11 years back, many of them sold off their consulting businesses, then they came back. So overall, their main line of business that have continued to be around for a long time is the accounting, auditing, okay. Right, which we call assurance. Mm-hmm. And then there's the tax consulting side, which is another line of service. And then where I work as a management consultant is called advisory, which is another. So there are essentially three lines of service, and then you have your internal function. That's how the entire firm works.
Okay. You did your bachelor's in engineering.
Correct.
And then you did a master's in supply chain. Why was this transition?
So I think for me it was more of a natural progression. Mm-hmm. Because back in Bangladesh, the culture is that organizations hire engineers. Mm-hmm. Because we have a lot of manufacturing plants.
Right.
And you need a lot of people to run the manufacturing plant. Mm-hmm. But if you think of a supply chain, you know, in a very crude, short explanation of it, you know, it has like planning, sourcing, manufacturing, making basically, mm-hmm. and then delivering. Mm-hmm. And then you have other, you know, aspects of managing returns and all those things. So in the plan, source, make, move, like model, which is known as a score model, the make, manufacturing, if you have a site, is often the biggest where you need the most amount of resources.
Right.
So what companies would do is hire engineers, mm-hmm. use them in manufacturing, mm-hmm. as they grow, they give them exposure into planning and sourcing and delivery, and you become a holistic supply chain manager with a very sound knowledge, mm-hmm. of how manufacturing works. So, and I often tell supply chain graduates and, you know, and people who are new into supply chain is, when you're part of the chain, mm-hmm. you should always try to learn what your customer's customer is doing in the chain, okay. and your supplier's supplier is doing in the chain. So that's how you're usually, mm-hmm. forecasting better, both in terms of managing your supply and your demand, mm-hmm. and you manage the supply chain better.
You started your career as an engineer, and then you transformed yourself working as the supply chain, can I call it an industry?
Professional, yeah.
Okay. So why do you think you needed an MBA degree? Because you're already into the job market, you're doing well for yourself.
Right, so my punchline for that,
okay.
is life is not an Excel sheet,
okay.
right? Mm-hmm. So of course, on an Excel, mm-hmm. it didn't make sense. A lot of my mentors explained to me, hey, your career is taking off, you've spent 9 years, and I worked in the same company.
Right.
I just made senior manager before I quit and came, mm-hmm. For my MBA, and it was an international company, you know,
right.
you had the opportunities of doing global roles and things like that. But for me, it was important to actually explore a different country, mm-hmm. to explore how headquarters worked, to do an MBA, take a step back, mm-hmm. give myself a couple of years and really explore academia, mm-hmm. because I wasn't really satisfied with my engineering degree in my undergrad,
okay.
with the level of academic involvement that I had, because I was heavily involved in debating and organizing different things. I did everything else besides studying during undergrad, if I can say that. So for me, when I enrolled for a master's in development studies, and this was in Bangladesh because of my debating, I just enrolled.
Right.
A friend inspired me and I just enrolled and I loved doing the classes and I realized I really miss academia. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was taking a step back and do that.
Mm-hmm. So you finished your master's in development?
I didn't.
You didn't, okay.
No. I had a short stint in Myanmar, mm-hmm. for work.
Right, right.
So I stopped that course. Mm-hmm. But while I was in Myanmar, I did my GREs and I, right. you know, did my IELTS mm-hmm. and I applied, and then I thought, okay, you know, MBA is my path.
Okay. Right. So was that was a smart move. So when you were in Myanmar for your job, you were in a way already prepared for your plan to come to the US for higher studies?
So this is where I need to credit I need to credit my wife a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when I was in Myanmar, it was a change in setting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I didn't have all my friends, all my debating council colleagues, all my, you know, JCI, different organizations that I was part of. I didn't have all those additional things I would do after work.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go to work, come back, and my wife was there with me for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
So we used that additional time, and she used that additional time
mm-hmm.
to push me into studying for the GRE. So
right.
we set some milestones, and we just gave ourselves 6 weeks.
Right.
We didn't extensively prepare.
Mm-hmm.
After work every day, we'd just do one chapter of a guidebook.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the weekends, we'd do one practice test.
Mm-hmm.
And after 6 weeks, we were like, okay, this is the best we could do. Let's just go and do the test.
Right.
So that's how it worked,
right.
Actually.
And how long was the MBA program? Where did you got your master's degree?
Right. So I did a dual degree. And
okay.
You were mentioning master's in supply chain.
Right.
And so I did MBA and a master's in supply chain.
Right.
And I did it in UT Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
It's
the University of Texas.
University of Texas
mm-hmm.
at Dallas. Thanks for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an elite school,
mm-hmm.
but it's a great program.
Mm-hmm.
You only have 50 students in a cohort.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really engaging. You have people from diverse backgrounds, and you really get the personal attention of the teachers because it's such a small cohort.
Right.
And you know, it's one of the top 30, 40 schools in
mm-hmm.
the US in terms of business schools. So you get all the good things, but at the same time, it's not an elite school. We don't
right.
have a football team.
Right.
So often it's difficult for international students,
mm-hmm.
especially I would say over the last 2 or 3 years with a changing political environment,
mm-hmm.
to you know, get positions where companies would be willing to sponsor you,
mm-hmm.
your visa, and also to get the right opportunities. So yeah, that was a different type of experience.
Right.
Yeah. I want to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were doing your master's program, how was it difficult as an international student?
Doing an MBA course-wise is not very difficult.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then, understanding the culture,
mm-hmm.
talking to people,
right.
and you see MBA candidates are trained in networking with people,
mm-hmm.
and especially for international students, that was a difficult element
mm-hmm.
because I never watched American football.
Right.
If people said football, I would always think of soccer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
So it was difficult for me to spend time learning a game because I was into sports. I used
right.
to watch cricket. I used
right.
to watch soccer.
Mm.
I used to watch basketball sometimes. And I was into the different types of sports, but I was never into American football.
Mm.
Never into baseball that much. I knew the rules, but
yeah.
not into it.
Mm.
I would only talk about things that were of mutual interest.
Okay, got it.
And previously, I would try to find things that would interest them.
Mm-hmm.
But those things didn't interest me.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Then I refocused on things that interested me as well,
mm-hmm.
and only bonded with people that found these topics to be interesting
right,
as well.
Right, right.
So I would discuss international politics as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because as an international student,
mm-hmm.
one of the first things you were told is, don't talk politics.
Right, right.
That's not a conversation starter.
Mm-hmm.
That can always become tricky.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? I can't talk politics and religion? What am I going to talk about?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, as a debater,
right.
that's something I love talking about. So I was a Manchester United fan.
Uh-huh.
So I ended up in the Manchester United pub.
Mm-hmm.
We had a huge Dallas Reds group
mm-hmm.
who used to follow all the games. They would go to watch the games at 6 a.m. in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And you connected with people who had very different political and religious beliefs and had different perceptions on religion and politics. And because you're all united, you're all United fans, it was okay to talk politics and religion,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I had very open conversations with people. And I thought those conversations, connecting with people that had mutual interest
yeah.
as mine,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
not necessarily people who were in target organizations, right?
Right, right?
Some random doctor from a different field,
yes.
some random car mechanic from a very different field,
mm-hmm.
was also a United fan.
Nice.
And so that's how I think it helped me understand the culture better, the nuances better, and helped me become a better networker.
Mabur, how did you land up with the current job at PwC?
I think that happened right after your graduation, if we are not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, how did that happen?
So I think, and this is my perception, it's difficult if you don't go to an elite school to land consulting jobs. A lot of people do land consulting jobs, but it's relatively more difficult. And you know, I mean, you know, a certain type of consulting jobs.
Right.
And I think usually, and this is me speaking from my sample size, and this is not necessarily statistically, you know, this is more anecdotal. So I would say, I think it's people with a little more experience from non-elite schools who get in. If you don't have experience, relevant experience, it's difficult for a non-elite graduate to get in. So for me, even with the experience, it had to be networking, because we probably were not a target school, because organizations have target schools, and they would usually target many of the elite schools and many of the old schools who have, you know, that reputation of producing
like
great, the Ivy Leagues of the world, right? So for us, and this is something our university was very open about, that you know, we have graduates in all the top firms, we have, you know, alums in all those places. But all of them had to go through the networking route. So you also have to go through that route. So we were prepared. So, you know, we had a New York trip from Dallas. And I signed up because by then my wife had moved to New York with a job. So I would take the opportunity and came to New York, did a networking event, met an alum who was in PwC. She was gracious enough to introduce us to her team. Just so that we knew a few more people. And so we started, and they were, you know, mostly in assurance and auditing. So we spoke with them, added them up on LinkedIn, and every time I would visit my wife, I would send a message to one or two of those people and say, hey, are you up for a coffee? If you're free, I'd like to, you know, talk and know a little more about PwC as an organization, because I really found it as a great organization in terms of the culture. And I know this sounds cliched, but often from websites and interviews with people, you get a sense of what they're doing as a company or as a firm. And to me, PwC resonated well. So I really pushed and I really, really tried engaging. And there were other few other companies that I really pushed and, you know, the companies that I liked. And one of the conversations went really well. I clicked with the individual, you know, I had recently gotten married. We spoke about our lives. It was just a flowing conversation. And
just over coffee, right?
Just over coffee. And he was gracious enough to pay. And I was a student. I like that. You know, so, and he at the end of the conversation said, hey, listen, if you find roles that fit you, do let me know. We have an internal referral system. I can refer you. And I said, I do have to, and I think this is where many people fail to convert a good conversation into a referral, is they often are not ready with the roles in that organization, because you need to be able to help that person help you. So I think I was relatively more ready in this particular conversation. I've had conversations where I didn't convert to a referral, and this conversation converted to a very good referral. He liked the roles that I was applying to in terms of the match with my resume. And he personally reached out to the recruiter, emailed them and said, hey, I had a very good conversation with this person. I think he'll be a great fit for the firm. And I think that's something that PwC as a firm recognizes internal referrals pretty highly. And it worked out. Then I did the interviews, had nervous moments. and I think, honestly, I had luck because I had a lot of rejections from right and left, and PwC worked out. So if they rejected me and another organization rejected me, I would be back to square one, and I would be like a lot of my classmates graduating but still looking, which is not always a great situation to be in.
Nice. I think the point which our audience would understand is that internal referral works in every industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not only...
But then But then internal referral has helped you get that opportunity, right? But then when you get the opportunity to do the interview, it's all up to you.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. The internal referrals help you get your foot in the door.
Yes.
Right.
And this is something I did, which I think really helped me,
mm-hmm.
is after I got the interview,
mm-hmm.
I started tracking people on LinkedIn
mm-hmm.
with whom I had some connection.
Right, right.
Like either they went to the same school
mm-hmm.
or they went to, and my school is relatively new.
Right.
It's only a 50-year, it's less than 50-year-olds as a school. So I didn't have a lot of alums.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a few. But then, you know, people from Bangladesh,
mm-hmm.
just because they're from Bangladesh. Hey,
right.
reaching out as a fellow Bangladeshi.
Right.
Reaching out to people who used to debate.
Right.
Like, hey, reaching out as a fellow debater.
Yeah. Find a common thread. Right.
Find a common thread
mm-hmm.
and just say, hey, I have an interview in your organization.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I would like to have a conversation with you
mm-hmm.
to understand a little more. And I found the conversion rates
mm-hmm.
when I sent similar messages when I didn't have an interview, said I wanted to know more about the organization, the return rates were much lower.
Okay.
But the number of people that responded with, hey, sure, let's get on a phone call,
mm-hmm.
was significantly higher when I already had the interview.
Okay.
And
yeah.
these conversations really helped me prepare for the interview
mm-hmm.
because I knew a lot more about the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see what in the organization I was more passionate about. I could already find a fit for me. And when you realize that, I think it's you can easily, more easily reflect that in the interview. It's not an artificial,
right.
It's not forceful,
right.
It's natural.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, I know this is what you're doing,
right.
this is what I love doing. I know you want to be integrating in a certain way. This is how I had helped my organization previously integrate.
Right.
And I know these are the challenges.
Yes.
Nice, yeah.
You know, so it's way more natural.
Yeah, to put it in a simple way, like you knew more than Google, right? Because
Absolutely.
You were networking to the, you know, to the people who were working there.
I know more
yeah.
than Google and
yeah.
all the other Glassdoors
right.
and the LinkedIn and the
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was really
a
very
good
helpful and inspiring
yeah.
conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Mabrur, for your time. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, my pleasure. And thank you for inviting me.
Right. If anybody wants to reach out to you for any career advice, what would be a best way to reach out to you? LinkedIn, email, what do you prefer?
So I think LinkedIn
mm-hmm.
is probably my go-to place.
Okay.
Because, you know, I don't want to let go of the training.
Right.
So I'm very active on LinkedIn. So
okay.
feel free and happy
yeah.
to happy
okay.
to respond. And
yeah, we'll have your LinkedIn account on our description. Yeah.
Okay, so on that note, it's time to wrap up. But before we do so, we would like to thank the English Speaking Union, ARNIC, and the Rome New Immigrant Center for providing us the space to record the podcast. And for those of you who have newly arrived in the United States, ARNIC provides free English language classes and free professional development classes. So I would suggest you to get in touch with ESCU ARNIC.
And I would suggest you to go to our website, podcast@theendoftheday.com, to find interesting interviews like we just did with Mabrur. And yeah, do subscribe to our YouTube channel, Podcast at the End of the Day. Find us on Spotify, iTunes, and subscribe to our channel.
Yes. On that note, it's time to say bye-bye. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for watching and listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey guys, a quick note. If you have a personal story that you think might be helpful to the newly arriving immigrants in the U.S., please contact us. We would love to feature you in our podcast. Go to our website, podcast@theendoftheday.com, and write to us by going to the feedback section.
And by the way, if you love this podcast, you can support us with a small donation. Your help will enable us to continue producing more episodes. The link to support our podcast is in the description below.